Hi, welcome to the 2022 Tech Congress series. My name is Adriana, and this series will feature civic technology experts doing transformative work in the civic tech space. A little bit of background. Tech Congress is a nonpartisan organization that places computer scientists, engineers, and other technologists to serve as technology policy advisors to members of Congress through our Congressional Innovation Fellowships. We work with Congress to expand the voice of civic tech experts during the policymaking process. Today, we'll be spotlighting Amanda Renteria. Amanda is currently the Chief Executive Officer at Code for America. Code for America is a nonprofit organization that looks to close the gap between policymaking and technologists to build digital tools and services that are accessible to all communities. Amanda has been involved in public service and policymaking for the majority of her career and has worked in a diversity of positions before Code for America. She has previously worked as Chief of Operations for California's Attorney General in 2017 and has served as Chief of Staff in the Senate during the 2008 recession, earning her title as the first Latina Chief of Staff in the history of the United States Senate. Thanks for joining us today, Amanda. We're so glad to have you.
Oh, it's fantastic to be with you all.
Yeah. So I just wanted to get started and ask you, did your family and background influence your interest in civic tech policy and government?
I think given how close I am to my family, I would say they've influenced probably every single move I've made. But certainly one piece for me has always been, I'm very, very lucky to just have been in the space that I'm in today. But going back to where I grew up in the Central Valley of California, it was the lowest income congressional district in the state and among the poorest communities, poorest 10 communities across the country. And I've been really blessed to be able to have some amazing educational opportunities, career opportunities. And it's never lost on me that part of that is having then the responsibility to ensure I can help others achieve their potential. And so a lot of that has come from where I grew up, how I grew up with parents who grew up in the fields as farm workers. All of that really is the mix that not only shapes my career decisions, but the passion for public service, the passion for connecting communities with access to benefits that government has that are intended for certain communities and all too often rarely get there. And so I guess the long-winded way of saying, yes, of course, I've been shaped by exactly where I come from and still on the journey of trying to make my parents proud of what I do.
Yeah, and I think it's really important that we have people like more females and more Latinx people in the civic tech and government space. So could you tell me about your time studying at Stanford and how did your studies at Stanford influence your post-grad career goals?
Yeah, studying at Stanford, I think maybe some call it studying. For me, it was probably surviving, given that it was a tough leap for me. Small rural town, you know, girl going to what to me at the time was like this huge big city of Stanford, and then being challenged of being in an environment that was so different from where I grew up, where opportunities seem endless, and it almost was a world I didn't quite understand. Coming from where I came from, my parents not really having a connection to Stanford or even knowing exactly what endeavor, when I said yes to attend, what that really meant from just a life perspective and how I can catch up to what I would deem like the world at Stanford. So it was, for me, a really important step function that I learned that a kid from where I grew up could make it at a place like Stanford. And for me, that was as much personal as it was doing it for the community. And so graduating, I still was in the space of, all right, how do I now utilize what the experience and the opportunity I just had to making a difference for others? Because I was the first woman and the first Latina from my high school to go to Stanford, I think my sense of duty and responsibility to make it a bit of an easier path for someone else actually really started in graduating from Stanford.
Yeah, that's honestly really interesting because I myself am a Hispanic, like I come from a Hispanic family. So it's really inspiring to hear that. And I just wanted to ask if you've been very involved in politics and policymaking for some time now. So like, what have these experiences working in government taught you about the role that technology has within the public sector and its importance?
So I'll start with just this sense of being in public service, and not simply for me the honor of serving the public, serving others, but also recognizing that when you are in government, you're in working in a place of scale, right? When policies change, they actually affect not just my neighborhood and my community, but oftentimes the entire city or the entire county, or if you're working at the state, the entire state, or when you're working at the federal level, the entire country. And how important it is that we have people who do come from different perspectives, generations, backgrounds, in those places of what I would say leverage in making people's lives better, or unfortunately, if you don't get it right, worse. And so for me, that has always been why public service, government, trying to impact it has been so important. The second piece, though, is really the technology side of it. So for all my time in government, I loved, you know, grappling with like the policy and what should it be. And I remember being 8 months pregnant as we were drafting the Affordable Care Act and deciding whether or not maternity care should be a basic part of the Affordable Care Act. And it was a reminder of how important it is to be in those rooms. But then, and now, as I look at my role, it's not just important to pass that policy and have lived experience in the room when you're writing policy, but it's equally important as you're actually implementing that policy. So we can have all the best language in the world, but if we're not actually meeting people where they are, they know nothing about it. And so part of what's exciting for me is technology gives us an opportunity to get that last mile right. For all the work I did early in my career to make sure that, you know, women had maternity care, man, if we are not on the front end of that, making sure it gets to people, then what are we fighting for? And so in many ways, I see this is a natural evolution of my career, but a really important point when I think about it, all of your listeners out there, that it's not just about the thinking, that we cannot forget about the implementation of those policies, because we are finding that's really the connection that we need when we think of communities that have been left out for so long.
Yeah, I completely agree. Obviously, that policy needs to actually be getting out from the paper and into people's lives. And technology does really help bridge that gap. So I wanted to ask you, how and why did you get involved in civic tech coming from your previous positions working in public sector? And what has the most memorable thing you've worked on been?
Whoa, gosh, I feel like most memorable. I feel like I've had the opportunity to work on so many different policies and how much it all really makes a difference. And not only the policies that have passed, but the policies that didn't pass, all of that makes a difference in terms of why I'm inspired by policymaking, government, and implementation. But to answer your question directly is why did I get involved in sort of civic tech specifically? I do believe that this is the calling of our generation, my generation and younger generations, that the idea that if we rethink about how government connects with the people they serve, technology is a real opportunity to get that right. And civic tech, and particularly organizations that have been on the front lines of trying to figure out how to do this for a very long time, need to have a voice right now as we've all reset in a much more remote kind of way. Because what I think has surfaced for everybody is if you're not connected, if you don't know how to use digital technology, if you're not familiar with technology, you're missing out and being left out by technology services today, by government, by the way the world runs. And so for me, it's a really important aspect to not only have skills and people in this space, but as we think about what government can look like for a new generation, technology is a big piece of that. But we have to be certain that technology is driven by people with a diverse set of perspectives so that we are uber inclusive this time around versus when we did it in the paper format many years ago or many generations ago even.
Yeah, that is completely true. And so speaking of bridging the gap and bringing technology to the people, could you tell me more about Code for America? Like, what brought you to work at Code for America?
So in 2019, 2020, you know, I'd been in politics and public service for a long time in government or government, close to government entities and campaigns. And what I started to realize is we obviously still need, but back then the considerable distrust people were beginning to have was, I could see it. You know, I could see even the way people responded to me when I said I worked in public service, it'd be like, roll your eyes. And why are you doing that? Followed on by more distrust. And I think right now we're at a pretty high level of lack of trust in government. But the reality is government still affects people's lives every single day. And we do need to improve that bond and trust in our government. And so when I looked at entities who are really doing the real work to connect communities, even the most skeptical communities, to services, to the kinds of policy intentions that people had, it was, for me, Code for America. It was civic tech space that was really trying to deliver services in a new, more modernized way that was inclusive, reaching communities left out. What COVID did is, for a long time, Code for America was going to governments and saying, oh, it'd be really great if you could deliver this digitally instead of having people stand in a line and fill out a form and talk to four people before getting a yes. If only we could do that more modern or from their phone. Well, what quickly happened in the pandemic is all of a sudden that was the only means to access resource, critical, critical resources. And so the conversation immediately changed for a number of different organizations, but also government, to say, actually, maybe we can do those digitally. You know, maybe we should make sure that people can get, or kids can get access to, or resources online, as opposed to having to go to the school or having to go to a building or having to fill out a paper form. And so this is why I'm so excited about being in the civics tech space today, is because there's been a sea change of mindset because of the pandemic when everything had to go remote. I think that has sped up our ability for us to answer the call for what a new modern government could look like. And I'll say it once again, a new modern inclusive government could look like, because, by the way, technology is going to affect every aspect of our lives, including government. And technology has a way of making things efficient. It could either make it efficient in an inclusive way, or it can make it efficient in an exclusive way. And we've just exacerbated the inequities we see in the country today.
And on this, keeping up this topic about how COVID-19 affected our digital world, I wanted to ask you, like, did this unprecedented change, like, did it affect the way policymakers saw the importance of digital services? And what has been the most challenging aspect of this work during the pandemic?
So it did change people in a couple of ways. One, it made it more real that you just did have to have good digital infrastructure in order to keep up with the crisis at hand. When you look across the country, the states that had the toughest time getting resources to people were those states or those agencies that weren't quite tech ready to be able to, whether it was figure out where kids were so they can distribute school lunches, or whether it was just figuring out how to get stimulus payments out to particularly underserved communities. It really surfaced the cracks in infrastructure that made it hard for government. And so that was a big piece of what folks struggled with. And then the most challenging aspects is just being in a pandemic, right? And trying to figure out, not only, you know, I have an amazing Code for America staff who jumped in the moment of a pandemic to do everything they possibly could to get resources out to people as fast as they could, helping governments, helping agencies really drive resources out. And at the same time, they were there in their own lives dealing with a pandemic at home, whether it was their kids being home or elderly parents or having to isolate in different ways. You know, I think part of the, you know, struggle really of any nonprofit is the weight of responsibility that you have because of the mission we have, and managing your own life in the middle of a crisis. So my heart is like, for the team that I have, it's really amazing at Code for America. And at the same time, one of the biggest challenges is we were trying to juggle all of that at the same time. As we think of today and, you know, resetting in a new world really does affect every organization out there. But certainly we think about it a lot at Code for America. How is our staff affected by where we are now? And then how do we make sure that the clients and communities we serve, that they get what they need? Those dual responsibilities are often a heavy weight. And I just wish I had more time, more resources in a day so that we can actually do even more while we have this window, what I think is a window of opportunity as governments reset, to do even more so that we get systems in place for really generations to come.
Given that, like, with COVID-19, like, people in government and policymakers have begun to realize the true importance of, like, a digital government and help promoting, like, the digital world, how do you see the future of civic technology and digital services, particularly how they can impact communities, especially since your work with Code for America is all about delivering these services to communities through technology?
So there's a couple of ways that I hope for. So what I'll say is policymakers now understand the importance of digital delivery. I'm not sure we've really dug into, though, what are all the different ways bringing a technology or digital perspective can change the way government works. Everything from policy to implementation to just the process of how government works. And I'll give you an example. We were really excited to be involved in the child tax credit. When we heard about it, Code for America, because of our mission, was like, how do we make this easier for people? We didn't get sign off from the White House or the Treasury or anything like that. It was our mission to figure out what are ways that we can connect with communities who have been left out so that they can access the child tax credit, right? People who've never filed before. And so we got to work pretty quickly, and we started to build what we know is a mobile app, right? Because we knew that most of our folks are access things on their phone versus a desktop computer, and particularly low-income communities don't even have access sometimes to a computer system or high-speed internet, right? But your phone is actually a pretty good connector. And so the first thing we did is, how do you build a mobile app? How do you do it in multiple languages so that people can feel comfortable, welcomed into this process? And then how do you make sure you have simple language so that we're not confusing people as we build out the steps to access resources? And so what we were able to do is jump in quickly. We were able to build it. But what was equally important is not just delivering the $650 million that went through our systems for folks, but it was as much about partnering with government to say, listen, there is no magic bullet here. This is a process where we're going to introduce this intake process, and then we're going to work out the kinks along the way. That, you know, in technology, you call that agile, right? Or iterative approach. That's new for government. And so my hope is that not only are we changing throughput of families getting access to resources, but we're changing the way government actually operationalizes policies. That, to me, is really truly the magic, because it means that you're in learning, the government stays in a learning mode in order to reach communities that are also evolving over time. And with technology and data-driven decisions, you can actually begin to see not only the barriers people face, but you can see what people need even earlier than you might normally see. As an example, when we started to see people applying in the pandemic, we started to see our food assistance applications all of a sudden immediately spike. And we called the state of California and say, hey, here's what's happening right now. To be able to now use technology, not just as a response tool, but you can proactively use the data you're given, is an opportunity for government then to be more responsive, more proactive, and be able to really build an iterative, flexible, responsive government for, you know, an evolving world.
That's incredible. A lot of people, like during COVID-19, of course, were looking for ways to do things, applications for government services remotely. So it kind of did bring some good to the table by, like, obviously highlighting the importance of a digital world. So I wanted to ask, what's something you've learned about yourself throughout your career?
Everything. I feel I am deeply passionate about the work that I do. And that allows for a lot of learning. I remember when I moved over from, like, you know, the policy side to the politics side, and someone said to me, like, okay, Amanda, if you want to be successful in politics, it just can't be personal. And it always has struck me, like, but wait a second, I'm in public service, I'm in politics and campaigns and trying to make the world a better place because it is personal. And so one of the things I think I've learned over the course of my career, from the beginning to where I am now, is how much it really does matter to bring your full self to this space. And you know, in the early days, I don't think I talked a lot about how I grew up or where I grew up, largely because I wasn't sure it was very valued in the circles I was in. I would bring it up when we were talking about policy and someone asked, well, how does this affect rural communities or low-income communities or immigrant communities? I would then bring it up. But I think one of the pieces I've learned over time is we do have to bring our full selves, talk about that lived experience, not just because, you know, it feels good to bring our families and our work and ourselves to the work, but it's also really important for our country to understand the different paths that people have walked. And I'd argue, now looking back at myself at whatever it was, 25, that I wish I would have done more of that early on in my career and seen myself as a conduit to that. Today, I definitely not only see myself as a conduit to that, whether it's in the tech space or the government space, because there still isn't a lot of women of color or Latinas in some of these spaces. But I think it's important to also call out the other folks in the room who are bringing a perspective that might have been missing for a very long time.
Yeah. And hearing your story from working directly in policy to where you are now with Code for America is truly inspirational, because not everyone can make that change to directly, you know, like make the policy, like going from being a politician and you're just like doing something completely different. So it's really cool to hear how your career changed like that. So I wanted to ask you, what does being a civic technologist mean to you?
Yeah. Well, on your observation, I think it's because I haven't figured out what I want to be when I grow up. So it's changed over the course of my life in terms of figuring out what are the skills I can use to make a difference. But it's also led to a pretty interesting career path, because if your North Star is how do you make a difference in people's lives, and that's the kind of work I want to do every day, it changes as to where the change is happening. And so my view of what civic tech is today is it really is marrying what we believe at Code for America to do, be the two biggest levers to change people's lives at scale, which is technology and government. And it's bringing those two together in terms of the way you do the work, the way you connect with communities, and really the way you, what I hope, change the world for the better.
I completely agree. And honestly, being in college still, it's really relieving to hear from you that you were also like in my shoes at one point. So from that, I wanted to ask, what's one resource you would share with someone who's looking to enter the space?
A couple things. One, come to our Code for America Summit in Washington, D.C. on May 16th and 17th. Yeah, I joke, but it is actually a pretty cool place to kind of get a sense of the civic tech ecosystem. There's also a lot of different hackathons, and we have a Code for America volunteer base. Those kinds of things are really just good places to get involved and engage and learn about the space. But I'll say this, I think engaging in this space, whether it's listening to podcasts, whether it's reading some of the Civic Tech 101 books, this space is still quite evolving. And so you can argue there's a lot of experts, but there's going to be a heck of a lot more experts as this market evolves more and more. And you could be one of them, right? Everyone listening on this call, because it's still a new space. I wish it was more mature. I wish all of our government was a heck of a lot more modernized, but it's not. It's going to take listeners on this call. It's going to take people who are in colleges now to not just redefine how government interacts, but actually to do the work that ensures government reaches people where they are. And so it's never too early to start. And it's the perfect time to start, because it's still being defined as an industry and what it's going to mean. What this moment, not just of how we come out of COVID and what we've learned from it, but I think we are defining our tax system right now. I think we are defining when policy gets done and all of a sudden, how does it get implemented? I think there's all kinds of policies that our climate change policy that just passed will be defined on how it's implemented, right? And so when I think of implementation, that's when I think of technology. And it literally is being written right now, how we're going to do it for generations to come.
Yeah, and modernizing government is going to be a long and slow process, but we have to embrace the change. But I wanted to ask you the final question, and it's more of a get to know you question. What's your favorite food?
Well, I think this is where I think of myself as still that small town, rural country girl that used to go like going through the trees in the fruit and vegetable capital of the country. So pretty much any fruit not only brings me back to my kid days, but I love them. Pomegranates, watermelon are probably my two favorites. But yeah, it's pretty much, and my parents would probably say, I think it's about the sugar, not about the fruit. but yeah, that I guess is my favorite category of food.
That's so sweet. Thank you so much for sharing with us, Amanda. You're doing such important work, and we can't wait to see the growth and continued impact of Code for America. That's it for now. Follow our Twitter, and you can follow us at Congress Fellows to learn more about opportunities in the civic tech space and look at more features of incredible civic technologists like Amanda.